I'm Tom McDonald, in for Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. The United Nations climate change negotiations are set to begin Monday in Paris. For some of the younger activists attending the talks, it is very personal. WHYY's Carolyn Beeler reports.
Yanni Stefanzon is going to Paris because she's afraid of her heritage melting away.
Climate change has affected my life since I was very young.
Stefanzon is a 25-year-old chemistry master's student who will represent the indigenous Sami people of Scandinavia at the UN climate negotiations. She grew up in a tiny town in the mountains of central Sweden.
I was brought up in a reindeer herding family, and there's a lot of talking about weather and weather condition. And when I was fairly young, I noticed the talk was more about, well, this is strange, and now the ices are melting here and the lakes are open there and such things.
Another strange change, winter rains that later freeze over can cover the lichen and moss that reindeer eat in an impenetrable layer of ice, making it impossible for them to eat. Stefanzon says precipitation is also changing in the spring when baby reindeer are born.
All of a sudden, it starts to snow rain. And that makes it difficult for the newborn reindeer to become dry, and many of them freeze to death.
Stefanzon says the stress brought on by climate change has only gotten worse as she's gotten older. The traditional knowledge of weather patterns that her elders used to depend on matches less and less with reality.
The reindeers and us will live side by side, and if they are in good conditions, then we are happy, and it's kind of the priority number one. It's a lifestyle, and it's part of our tradition, our language, our religion, everything.
Stefanzon hopes to spread the message of her people in Paris. This month, she also ran in a relay race across Northern Europe in her traditional Sami dress to raise awareness for climate change ahead of the UN talks.
If I cannot be a reindeer herder, I wanted to help the reindeer through climate work, to work towards stopping climate change.
26-year-old activist Renee Karanunung will be flying from the opposite hemisphere to the Paris talks. Karanunung is one of 11 young adults from around the world shadowing their home country delegations through a program called Adopt a Negotiator. She'll be trailing the delegation from the Philippines.
So I'm actually currently living in Pasig City in Metro Manila, where it always floods. So during recent big typhoons in the Philippines, our city or our community is always flooded.
The capital city of Manila sits on a bay and has rivers cutting through its densely populated center. Typhoons have always been a problem there, but Karanunung says flooding is getting worse as heavy rains increase in frequency and intensity.
Now up to about like a month's rain can be dumped into the city in one day.
Karanunung will write about the negotiations in posts accessible for young people. A recent headline of one of her stories, Why the UNFCCC is Just Like High School.
So I think this is the problem of our generation, which we will carry on into the future. And the solution lies in us to solve this climate crisis.
Some countries save slots on their negotiating teams for young people. To expand youth participation outside of these official slots, the United Nations recognized young people as an official constituent group in 2009. That placed them alongside indigenous peoples organizations and women's groups, among others. Now, the youth constituency has a loose organization and no paid staff, but the official status gives youth groups access to the talks and permission to speak in front of delegates. Nick Nuttall is spokesman for the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UNFCCC, the host of the Climate Summit. He says youth have perhaps the most at stake there.
They are the generation that will inherit either our inspiring policies that governments take or the failed policies that governments fail to take in terms of what's going to happen to their future.
One of the people who's seen governments fail at a handful of previous climate talks is Nathan Thankey, the 25-year-old co-leader of the official youth constituency.
It's really tiring and really draining to go and kind of watch, if you're being melodramatic, like the end of the world being negotiated. It's very frustrating as a young person to repeatedly watch governments sort of quibble over commas and just not live up to the level of ambition that we all know is needed.
Thank you is from Belfast in Northern Ireland. He's been cobbling together funding to work as a youth organizer on the UN scene full-time since he finished college in 2014. What brings him back to the talks again and again are the other passionate young people he meets from around the world.
You go out, you go into the convergent spaces, the art spaces, the squats. And yeah, there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of different things happening. You get involved in very different kinds of conversations. It can be overwhelming, definitely, but it's mostly just very inspiring.
Thanky is not optimistic that world leaders will finally pledge to cut carbon emissions enough in Paris. Neither is Stephen O'Hanlon, a 20-year-old junior at Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania. But he still thinks it's important to go to the talks.
The Paris negotiations are representing the first time that world leaders are putting us in a different direction, putting us in a direction away from fossil fuels. And that's a huge victory for our movement. But it also, because it's not enough, we're going to need to keep pushing.
O'Hanlon sees Paris as the kickoff event for the next generation of climate activism. For The Pulse, I'm Carolyn Buehler.
Thanksgiving has become a jumble of family gatherings, football, and shopping. For his weekly conversation with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief of the Gallup poll, NewsWorks Tonight host Dave Heller asked what the numbers show about how happy people are with their personal lives.
The latest we updated was earlier this year, and it was well into the 80% of Americans who said they were satisfied with how things were going in their lives. The key comparison there is the 27% who say they're satisfied with the way things are going in the U.S. So when we focus inwardly, we're much, much more positive about our lives than when we pollsters call people up and say, pontificate on what's happening out there in the U.S. and around the world. People are much more negative in that latter instance.
Frank, when we move on from satisfaction to well-being, is it a different ranking?
Americans are quite positive on well-being as well. Now, well-being is a composite of a number of questions that we in HealthWays ask Americans every night. How's your personal life? How's your financial life? How's your social life? We say on a 0 to 10 scale, where 0 is the worst possible life you can imagine and 10 is the best possible life you can imagine, where would you put yourself? And the good news is that the big majority of us put ourselves up there in 7 to 10 on that scale that I just mentioned. Very few of us, as a matter of fact, put single digits, put ourselves below 5 on that 0 to 10 Cantrell scale, we call it technically here. So I would say going along with personal satisfaction, our own assessments of our lives is also very, very positive on a relative basis.
But let's look a little closer, teasing out demographics either by age or ethnicity or region of the country.
Dave, there are some significant differences depending on where you live. This is interesting. Take note, if you live or are thinking about moving to the West, and that would be Alaska and Hawaii and South Dakota and Wyoming and Montana, the good news is people there have the highest well-being of any of the 50 states. Now, for whatever reason, and maybe it's self-selection, the kind of person who wants to move to Montana is the kind of person who enjoys it once they get there. But for whatever reason, when we interview people out there in those states, they're the ones who have the highest well-being. Lowest well-being in some Midwestern states, in states like West Virginia, Kentucky, Mississippi, and some of the southern states. And then you ask me about how we're doing here locally. Well, not that good. Overall, Pennsylvania and New Jersey are below average, 34th and 35th in well-being by our measure of the 50 states. And Delaware is just behind 38th. So we're not at the very bottom of the list, but when we interview people in the tri-state area, their response to us about their well-being puts them below average.
Well, Frank, got to bring it up the day after Thanksgiving for those who are loosening their belt buckle a notch or so. Let's talk about the percent of Americans willing to admit that they are overweight.
Only 37% of Americans are willing to tell us that they're overweight, and only 5% say very overweight. The other 32% that makes up that 37 say, yeah, somewhat overweight. Now, of course, these are telephone interviews. It might be a little different if we had in-person interviewers like the good old days in people's homes asking them that question, because somebody weighing a lot, it would find it a little harder probably to tell the interviewer that they didn't consider themselves to be overweight. But anyhow, that's the data. We had had it as high as 48% who said they were overweight back in 1990. But for whatever reason, in more recent years, the number has come down.
Now, back to that 35 to 40% who admit being overweight. What percent of them are trying to lose weight?
24% of Americans overall say that they're actively trying to lose weight. That leaves a pretty big number there who obviously are not earnestly trying to do what perhaps they think they should be doing. Hence, we have the billion-dollar weight loss industry in this country, right? Trying to reach those people who should be trying to lose weight, but they aren't.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
In today's headlines, police have tracked down a fourth person wanted in connection with the shooting of a Pennsylvania state trooper during a chaotic car chase. Kamer Lewis is not considered a suspect in the shooting of Trooper Patrick Casey on Tuesday during the chase that ended in a fiery crash on Interstate 676. Police say they believe Lewis was a passenger in the vehicle that was stopped by troopers prior to the shooting. The driver of that vehicle, 17-year-old Giovanni Cotto, has been charged as an adult with attempted murder, risking a catastrophe, and other felonies. Trooper Casey was released from the hospital Wednesday. Penn State says it settled six more victims or accusers of Jerry Sandusky during the year that ended June 30th, bringing the payout to nearly $93 million. The university audited financial statements dated October 30th show $33.2 million in new payments over claims related to the university's retired longtime assistant football coach. The report says more claims could be paid in the future, but provides no details. The audit findings were reported by WJAC-TV in Johnstown. Sandusky's pursuing an appeal while he serves a 30 to 60 year in prison sentence on a 45 count child sexual abuse conviction. A homeless man has died months after being brutally beaten by a group of people outside a Philadelphia gas station. 51-year-old Robert Barnes died Wednesday at a suburban hospital, according to his sister. The assault in April outside a Sunoco gas station in the city's Olney section left Barnes in a coma. Three adults and three teens have been charged. Prosecutors have said the charges could be upgraded if Barnes died. Taking a look at the weather, partly cloudy tonight with a low of 47. Saturday, cloudy again with a high of 63. Sunday, morning showers and seasonable, very high with only 50 degrees. Monday, partial sunshine, also a high of 50. Still ahead.
The rhythms and the beat and the moves are all coming from Africa, so they are related.
We preview a Thanksgiving weekend tradition. The African dance group's performance this year focuses on Senegal. That's coming up as NewsWorks Tonight continues.
Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Addiction can test a family's strength. When someone you love is struggling with addiction, you struggle too. Karen can help restore peace in your family. For more than 60 years, Karen has worked in the field of addiction treatment and behavioral health care, helping to restore the lives of thousands of patients and their families. Karen will help you take the next step. A confidential and no-obligation assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at caron.org.
People's Light presents The Three Musketeers, The Later Years, playing November 18th through January 10th. Audiences will laugh their pantos off as Porthos, Athos, Aramis, and a chicken hunt for justice against the evil Lord Maserati in this musical adventure. Complete with plumed hats and sword fights, The Three Musketeers will have audiences shouting, "All for one and one for all." For tickets, peopleslight.org or 610-644-3500. People's Light supports WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Tom McDonald in for Dave Heller. If I say CRIZ, does that mean anything to you? It stands for Community Revitalization and Improvement Zone, a Pennsylvania program that's supposed to leverage hundreds of millions of dollars in new development for local communities. Everyone wants a CRIZ. Just two cities received one. Keystone Crossword's Emily Praviti says it's off to a surprisingly slow start.
I got Honeycrisp, but I went to a different stand with
it. It's a typical weekend at Lancaster Central Market. The aisles are really clean and well-lit and crammed full of shoppers, scouring some 65 stands for coffee, organic produce, fresh bread, meat. This market's been downtown for almost three centuries. But recently, each vendor had to do extra tax filings with the State Department of Revenue because of the city's CRIZ. Mary Goss heads the Central Market Trust, the nonprofit that manages the building.
Our stand holders, they're a lot of family-owned, family-run businesses, And it was did present a challenge for some of our standholders to track the information. I don't know that some of it's even tracked at these businesses.
Lancaster's CRIS has more than 700 businesses in it. They're each supposed to do this extra tax filing, but less than half have done it. The state says it needs the separate submissions to figure out tax revenue generated by businesses in the zone and the difference between the baseline year and any given year thereafter. That's what CRIS cities get to keep every year for 30 years to reinvest at the discretion of a locally appointed board. I asked Randy Patterson, Lancaster's Director of Economic Development and Neighborhood Revitalization, how much money the zone would be kicking out if everyone was filing.
Part of the challenge in that is how you do that process, because for an example...
This gets complicated. The bottom line is Lancaster's CRIS isn't generating as much money as expected. Bethlehem's isn't either, even though businesses there filed as required. Bethlehem Community and Economic Development Director Alicia Carner says she did not know what to expect, but media reports indicate Distillery Social Still was expecting between $50,000 and $60,000 annually, more than double the $23,000 Bethlehem's entire CRIS produced. Lancaster got about $130,000. Patterson says that's mostly would-be tax revenue from local sources. The state's share was much less.
I can't tell you I have an expectation of exactly what that number would have been, but certainly higher than $2,870.
At one point, Lancaster did project getting $300,000 a year from the CRIS. After that estimate was floated, but before the actual first-year CRIS results, the Zone's Authority Board committed to borrowing $8 million so two projects can get underway. Repayment costs start at $500,000 annually for 25 years. The authority hasn't issued these bonds yet, but already put the kibosh on doing any more until after there's a track record of how much money the zone will generate. Carner says that uncertainty is why the Bethlehem CRIS isn't planning to incur any debt at all in the foreseeable future. So why didn't Lancaster wait? Authority board member Ray DiAgostino says there wasn't a choice.
So based on the fact that we are obligated to do these first two projects, we were obligated then to actually do the borrowing.
DiAgostino's referring to agreements with developers, one verbal, one contractual. He acknowledges it might seem counterintuitive to do this before knowing exactly how much money is coming in. But he also says the CRIS will get nearly all taxes from the projects to use to repay the debt. CRIS rules do say the state will cover debt repayments if a CRIS cannot during the first 7 years, but has to be repaid. State Senator Lloyd Smucker says he's going to try to change some of the rules, though, if not necessarily that one. CRIS was Smucker's brainchild.
Thanks for coming to Lancaster.
The Republicans' district headquarters are barely a block from Central Market in a house that's more than 200 years old. Smucker says he's already trying to fix CRIS, that he met with officials from the State Department of Revenue within days of the pilot year results release.
We also question those figures. We're not, they don't really square with what we're seeing happening on the local level.
Tax returns are confidential by law, so the department's attempt to detail its calculations while maintaining that confidentiality is murky at best.
However, what we do have and what we can see is the local side of the program. So the earned income tax that's generated, and that's a much smaller tax than some of the state taxes. So the state portion ought to be multiples of that. So it doesn't make sense.
With just a year left in his term, he doesn't have a timeline for those amendments he'll push. They include changing language so hotel tax is counted as part of the increment, which it was supposed to be, but wasn't. Officials like Patterson also want to streamline filing so it's easier for businesses. In Bethlehem, Carner has not heard any complaints. But Lancaster-based accountant Steve Hohenwater gets why small businesses might feel overwhelmed by the process.
Having now prepared the report for 2 years, it's not that it's the calculations are not difficult. What's difficult is this is the fact that most small businesses do not collect their data in a fashion that lends itself to easily accumulating the data that's needed for the CRIS report.
Hohenwater's point, it's tedious to extract the information requested by the state's CRIS reports, and many small businesses can't afford to pay someone to do it. The city sent postcards and hired a consultant to explain CRIS and help businesses with their tax filings, all attempts to get businesses to make the effort and understand why it's worth it. The idea is the money will mean more people downtown, more businesses, more for everyone. Some business owners remember the educational attempts, others don't. At Central Market, reception was very much mixed, according to Mary Goss.
Because I don't know that it was explained to them in a way that they would understand and actually get excited about it, because I don't think that they understand or understood that it was something that was going to benefit everybody downtown, all businesses.
That's true, but the upside's a long-term thing. Most businesses won't see cost reductions or get any cash or get anything, really, for their trouble. At least, not right away. Emily Previty, Keystone Crossroads, Lancaster.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media collaboration focused on Pennsylvania's cities, their problems, and potential solutions. WHYY is leading the project. Thanksgiving weekend has a lot of traditions besides turkey. There's a parade and Black Friday shopping. Philadelphia is home to another tradition that's decades strong. The Philly-based African dance group and drum ensemble, Kulu Mele, presents a show every year on Thanksgiving weekend. This time, they're focusing on the dance and music of Senegal. Newsworks Tonight producer Kimberly Haas attended a preview.
Traditional dance from Senegal, Cuban rhythms, hip-hop. All art forms that thrive, but thousands of miles apart from each other.
It's all connected. They're cousins.
Dorothy Wilkie is the artistic director of the Philadelphia-based Kulu Mele African Dance and Drum Ensemble.
Because it all comes from Africa. The rhythms and the beat and the moves are all coming from Africa, so they are related.
Kulu Mele's annual show this weekend will highlight those connections with a program that includes all three. This year, they also have a special focus on the West African nation of Senegal.
We have an artist come in from Senegal, but she lives in New York. Her name is Madibas Wiles, and her son, Mahama. And we had them come in and choreograph two dances from traditional dances from Senegal, Saba and Balant.
Zakia Cornish is a dancer and the stage manager with Kulu Mele. She says this year's focus brought a special challenge for the dancers.
Senegalese style, it's very intricate. There's a relationship between the drum and the dance, and the movements will be marked by the drummers. It's so much listening. You really have to be in sync with the music. It's a style of African dance that is actually being lost here in the States.
It's a mission of Kulu Mele to keep these art forms alive. After 40 years with the company, Dorothy Wilkie is pleased to see a generation coming up behind her with the same commitment.
I just call myself passing the torch, you know, keeping the culture alive, and that's what Kulu Mele is about. I'm not an ancestor, but it's passing the torch.
Kulu Mele African Dance and Drum Ensemble will perform Saturday and Sunday at the Painted Bride Arts Center. For WHYY, I'm Kimberly Haas.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Binyakov and Kimberly Haas. News director, Eugene Son. Our engineers this week were Al Banks and Adam Stanislavski. John Mussoni is acting vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Tom McDonald for NewsWorks Tonight.
Arden Theater Company supports WHYY and presents Equivocation, a comedy about Shakespeare, where he receives a royal commission to write an historical play on a treasonous act and must find a way to tell the truth without losing his head. Performances must end December 13th. For tickets, 215-922-1122 or artintheater.org. Arden Theater Company supports WHYY.
This week on the Dinner Party Download, our annual all-food episode.
In which star chefs Dan Barber and Gabrielle Hamilton make fine dining out of Triscuits and garbage.
And fresh off the boats, Eddie Wong gives us the do's and don'ts of donuts.
Who puts a donut that's been bitten back in the box?
That's a don't. I'm Brendan Francis Noonan.
I'm Rico Galliano. All this plus The Roots' Questlove on the Dinner Party Download.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
Virtua proudly supports WHYY. This is the time of year to sign up for health insurance. When choosing a health insurance plan, it's important to know whether your doctor or hospital is included. If you want to use a Virtua physician, hospital, or outpatient service, you can find out if Virtua is in the plan you're considering by calling 888-VIRTUA-3. That's 888-VIRTUA-3. Virtua proudly supports WHYY.